So what is the deal with male-dominated fields? How should female physicians approach selecting their career with these issues in mind? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast. Before we get into the show, here's a quick message from MR Insurance, a small business that helps physicians with their disability insurance needs. Michael L. Arelvas is a CFP professional and insurance agent committed to helping physicians nationwide with their term life and disability insurance needs. He provides an objective, transparent, and education-focused process that aims to help physicians make prudent decisions and avoid overcomplicating things. He exclusively offers own occupation disability insurance policies for residents, fellows, and attending physicians. We really like Michael and know he's got your best interest at heart when it comes to disability insurance. We know he'd be happy to help you with whatever your needs are. You can find Michael at drpodcastnetwork.com/MRinsurance or contact him at 1-800-817-4522.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew. Welcome back to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy to have you here. For my returning listeners, welcome back. For my new listeners, you're in the right place because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Today, we have Barbara Hamilton. Barbara Hamilton is an interventional radiologist, leader, and the author of Save Lives, Enjoy Your Own, Finding Your Place in Medicine. She helps aspiring and early career doctors succeed in the surgically oriented and traditionally male-dominated fields by pulling back the curtain on what it looks like to be a woman and parent in medicine. Ultimately, she strives to be an example of what is possible for those who would follow in her footsteps. Through her writing, speaking, and coaching, she aims to patch the leaky pipeline of women aspiring to male-dominated fields so more talented people of diverse backgrounds can join her as they transition into fulfilling, multifaceted lives as an attending physician. Learn how to build career capital and thrive at TiredSuperHeroine.com. Hey everybody, my name is Andrew Tisser, host of the Talk to Me Doc podcast for early career physicians and career strategist for physicians. And I have the pleasure of sharing this morning's cup of coffee with Dr. Barbara Hamilton, and I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Barbara Hamilton. I'm an interventional radiologist in Southern California, and I found my way into interventional radiology 6.5 years ago, and it's been a great career. And it's been my mission to share that ever since. And I realized over time that I was sharing some of the similar challenges with women in other fields. And I thought we could come together and help each other out. So that's the basis of my platform, which is called TiredSuperHeroine.com. It started as a blog, and that's been going for 2 years. And I just started my own podcast. So that's just me, raw, unedited, and talking to you as though, you know, you're with your attending in the locker room where there's no pretense. It's just me telling you how I think it is.
That's awesome. So, you know, we're coming together today to talk about male-dominated fields in medicine. Traditionally, male-dominated fields, they're getting a little better. I think maybe you could share a little bit of your story and some of the challenges you faced in the beginning of your career when selecting your career, and then we could branch out from there.
Yeah, great. So I went into a male-dominated field of radiology, which if people don't know, it's about a third female. And when you go through radiology residency, you have to choose a specialty from there because radiology is head to toe. And I wanted to do interventional radiology, which is basically the surgically oriented specialty out of radiology. And where I came from, it was just this kind of traditional atmosphere, great, like Ivy League place and just fantastic training. But the convention was that all the women in the program would go into women's imaging. So there would be 7 people per year in each class. And of those, just 1 or 2 would be women. And they would feed this pipeline of women's imagers. And so that was the convention. And it was kind of stepping outside the norm to do something else. So I just knew I had this kind of burning desire inside. I knew that I had to do IR. Why? Some people say, why? You know, some people don't embrace the surgically oriented lifestyle. But to me, being able to run in for an emergency and like actually make a huge difference at that moment, that's something, maybe it's for an adrenaline junkie, but it's something that's so rewarding. And I just want to share that with other women, because there are a lot of messages you get along the way that this isn't really for women. And so at that time when I was making this big decision, I didn't have a family, but that's always in the back of everyone's minds, you know, like, you're a woman, you're going to reproduce, which is not true for everyone. And even if you do, I mean, that shouldn't be the deciding factor in your career. So that's the basis of my platform.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's crazy to think about it. It's 2021 and people are like, no, you got to do something easier, you know, which is absurd.
Some people will. And it's, you know, the term benevolent sexism is perfect for this. You know, there are lots of older people. And when you're coming up in medicine, it's hierarchical. Everyone knows better than you. Of course, you're going to listen to what they say, but you also, so that's why I think it's especially challenging for people entering medicine and these, specifically these fields.
Yeah. I mean, benevolent sexism, and then still there's overt sexism, unfortunately. And when it comes to some of these procedural specialties, I think it's worse, you know, in the surgical specialties, especially, but, you know,
exaggerated.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, we're seeing more and more ratios favoring female to male in medical school classes, yet we're not seeing that at the residency level. So I think my first question is, and you know, pardon anything I don't know about this topic, because I'll agree that I don't know enough about it. But my first question is, so you're an up and coming medical student, excuse me, and you're looking towards your specialty choice, and you're hearing some of these messages. Maybe you want to be a surgeon, maybe you want to go into orthopedics or something, and the answer is, well, don't you want to have a family or something along those lines. So how do you advise some of these up and coming medical students when it comes to specialty selection? Because it's a real concern.
You hear it on Twitter every day. It's amazing. Like you said, it's 2021. I cannot believe it sometimes. So what I advise people to go take a look at what I've written. I write about this at Tired Superheroine, the blog. And it became the basis for my book. So 2 years into writing, I had kind of taught myself to edit like crazy. That was a really good experience. And then out of that came my book, which is called Save Lives, Enjoy Your Own, Finding Your Place in Medicine. And this is a user's guide for that woman. And also for other people who don't fit inside the typical medical box, you know, they don't fit the typical profile of an orthopedic surgeon or a plastic surgeon or ENT has a few more women, but you know, all these procedurally oriented and male dominated fields. I want to urge women to not just settle for something, because I think that's at the heart of a lot of the issues that we're dealing with now. You know, we have more than 50% of the talent pool is women coming out of medical schools. If you and I want to have a good surgeon when we need one, we need women to go into those fields. And we can't have these old cultural expectations and biases feeding in. I mean, it's really damaging. It's damaging people's early careers, and it's just not right. So I'm standing against it. And so the book it's like a user's guide and how to figure out where you fit in, where your people are, even if you don't look like them. So for example, when you walk into your typical interventional radiology department, you expect to see men. I've had a lot of people tell me I'm the first female IR they've ever worked with or maybe ever met. You take the good with the bad. I think it's actually been a fun aspect of my career. You get to just surprise people all the time. Like, yes, I'm the IR and I'm going to embolize your pelvis. And, you know, and it's really exciting work. So I think all these fields where you get to use your mind and your hands, you get to diagnose and you get to treat. I mean, they're just incredible. And I don't want women to miss out on that. I just want it to be an example, you know, someone who's not a society president or something like that. Somebody who's just showing what everyday life is like as a woman in IR or a woman in a procedurally oriented field.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, thinking back to my own medical school experience, you know, one bad attending could turn you off from an entire field, right?
That's so true.
And we see it all the time, you know, and I, when I advise medical students, it's, did you hate the specialty or did you hate the the toxic environment you were working in, right? So, but we see it a lot that medical students, especially female medical students, will hear a lot of these messages from their male attendings. Oh, well, you know, you're going to work a lot of weekends and you're not going to be home with your kids. And like you said before, some women don't want children. And that's not an absurdity in 2021. So
even that comment can be damaging. It's like, right. You know, I'm more than my reproductive organs. And yeah, so I have fallen prey to that myself. I mean, on my platform, I want to talk about what it's like to be a mother in medicine. At the same time, I don't want to alienate people who have zero interest. I have close friends who have zero interest in being mothers. Sure. And we, of course, need to normalize that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's, and then you start doubting yourself, right? And you're like, well, maybe they're right. You know, not everybody goes through medical school straight from college, but a lot of people are pretty young when they're still selecting their specialty and tend to be impressionable. And, you know, a couple of those bad comments may completely change the trajectory of your career. So I think it's important to have these conversations.
We're so impressionable at that point. And you're just looking for guidance and everything is new. So I just want to be a voice against that common misconception that women don't belong in certain spaces. Going to what you said about, you know, one attending can ruin it. There are lots of misconceptions about, you know, so you might have one female attending, say a surgeon who is like gruff with someone in the OR because maybe they're not listening or something, you know, there could be some valid reason. And then this all just kind of feeds on itself. And there are crazy misconceptions about women in IR that we're like hunched over under our lead, like we're too weak to hold up our lead suit and that we're like gargoyles. I've seen some of the funniest misconceptions. I don't think I look like a gargoyle. We've had some of these, you know, the misconceptions are that you need to be 6 feet tall because when you walk in, a lot of times, you know, the people are. There's just this stereotype in IR. It's that you need to be from some elite physician family. I'm not. You need to be hyper competitive. I mean, I've actually written about how it's a beneficial thing sometimes to stand out. And so when your whole applicant pool and everybody on the interview trail looks like a blue suit or a black suit, when you're the only woman there, it actually can be an asset. You're automatically remembered. You're memorable.
True. Yeah, I think that's great. You know, well, and as we transition from the medical student level, you know, into the early learner stage at the residency level, maybe you did decide to go into a surgical field or a male dominated field, but I'm sure there are many of the same grumblings along the way, and being a woman in medicine, unfortunately, is still a trending hashtag, you know? And so what advice do you give to the young resident who's encountering some of these issues, and how to, you know, how to speak up and how to fight for themselves and how to get through it? I mean, I can't talk to it at all, of course, but I'd like to know maybe some of your advice to the early learner.
Yeah, thank you for your openness and learning. And also, I feel like I'm constantly learning because the issues that affect women in these fields affect minorities as well. And not just minorities of race, but of sexual identity and, you know, gender identity. And we all have a lot to learn culturally. But my advice is to avoid isolation. I think it can be very isolating to be the only woman in the room. And nowadays, you can find people online, so band together online. And that's part of the purpose of my platform. I would love for one day for it to become like this online community. I have a Facebook group, which is just kind of at its budding stages. But I would love for that to be a place where people could actually, a safe place where people could say, this creepy thing happened at work, or I'm really doubting myself. And that hasn't really happened yet. So at this point, you know, I'm happy just being a presence on the internet with, you know, good search engine optimization where people can maybe find me in the middle of the night when they're doubting themselves and say, okay, I can read an article about this. And then out of that, you know, the podcast, I just want to make it more real for people and be able to engage busy people. So you know, you can listen to these episodes on the go and they're really short.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you for doing this, for being out there for people. I think when it comes to any of these issues in medicine, whether it be like severe burnout or discrimination or what have you, with all the problems we're dealing with, it can be, like you said, so isolating, right? And when you're in the thick of it, you think that you're the only one going through it. And when you're able to at least talk to one person about it, I think it makes it a lot better. So I think the next question becomes, so, you know, how do men help? Right. So how can we help? And obviously pointing them towards people like yourself and other leaders in medicine, leader women in medicine. But how can we support our female colleagues and what can we do to help?
There are so many great supportive people online, and just retweeting what people say or their experience is just a really nice small way to do that. And you know, I think it's important to realize that we just haven't reached gender equity yet. And it's kind of, you know, it's depressing to think about that we haven't, but we just haven't. And if anything, I think our culture has backslid in recent years. And we don't need to get into politics, but I mean, it was just, you know, it's, I think the first thing is not denying that. You know, some people are saying, well, no, there's no gender pay gap. And there's, you know, we've reached
they're blind, equity. Right?
Yeah. What did you say?
I said, then they're blind.
Yeah. They're, you know, pay equity deniers and opportunity deniers. And there just is a gap and people fall into it all the time. And so that's one of the things is just, like you said, learning about it and being open to it and being open to people's experience who's different than yours is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially, you know, that we're seeing is at the residency learner level, we're seeing a lot more female program directors and taking high positions in academia where women can really cling to their leaders. But, you know, this just popped into my head, so it doesn't flow. But you know, you see also from other staff in the hospital, some of these misconceptions and issues as well, like, oh man, female doctors are so like disorganized or like they're all over the place. You know, I hate where I see this in the ER. I've heard it before.
Oh, she's scattered.
Yeah. I like working with the male docs way better because they know how to make a decision or, you know, just garbage.
Oh my gosh.
So just trash like that. But you see it all the time, stuff. Right?
Wow. I mean, that's different from what I hear. That's, yeah, it's painful
stupid.
To hear. It's painful to hear. So yeah, one of the things that you can do as a male physician is to try to reality test that. It's really hard because if there is a group of nurses or technologists standing around talking like that, I mean, it's hard to just break into that and be like the white knight. But yeah, I mean, what do you do in that situation? And then I don't know if you teach residents, but like, do you see residents standing by listening to this? I think it's so damaging. So maybe if you are in a position where you're educating residents, taking them to the side and saying, you know, that is gender biased, please, you know, kind of encouraging them not to internalize that.
Yeah, I mean, I've now worked at probably like 10 hospitals or something like that. I've heard it at many, many hospitals.
Wow.
And emergency medicine is not, you know, traditionally a male dominated field at this point. Half my residency class was female and a lot smarter than me, but but I do see it. I do hear that nonsense all the time and try to challenge it, but that's the nurses and other techs and other things. Unfortunately, a lot of people have said things like that. And I just don't know where it comes from. Honestly, I really don't. These are female nurses, right? Like these are not male nurses saying this. These are female nurses. So I really don't know where that comes from.
Yeah. And I think that's really damaging too. This notion of female on female violence and that we just hold each other down. I mean, there are plenty of examples of how that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, my whole platform is to support women and not tear them down. But it's really painful to hear anytime people say that cultural trope. It's, yeah, it kind of takes the wind out of your sails. Maybe it's not an answerable question today, but do you work with trainees?
Yeah, I have some. We have a small family medicine program where I work. So I work occasionally with some all-level residents. Not all.
I'll have to ask our emergency medicine residents if they're hearing things like that. And so in my department, it's a bit different. I'll just share my experience.
Sure.
When I am at my trauma center or at the smaller hospital, these two hospitals I work at, I'm the only IR that day, so I'm their only choice. And then I'm the only radiologist at the smaller hospital that given week, on a given week. So I'm not, maybe that's why I'm not hearing these things. And the other thing is I encourage people to just be as good as they possibly can be, because, okay, there are so many aspects to this, but there's the internalized misogyny, the internalized racism that people who don't fit in the box are facing. But if you can put your head down when you hear something like that and just, this is going to sound so trite, but at every stage, like just be as good as you possibly can, almost like in an insolent way. Like I'm just going to laser focus on these patients I'm serving and what I'm doing, because a lot of it is cultural noise and I don't think it's going anywhere for a while. So I do think, you know, it's harder for women in these fields sometimes. But I just want to show the other side that it's so rewarding. It's just so worth it. It's not like I'm over here in Southern California, like struggling. I am. So I've been chief of interventional radiology for, they promoted me while I was coming off maternity leave. That's how badly they needed leadership in the section. And I thought that was really progressive. And of course it's to my credit too. You know, I had been making steps to improve things in the department. So like I had demonstrated some leadership capability. And now I'm actually stepping into the largest leadership role ever. I'm going to be chair of my department.
Wow.
So of radiology, which is over IR. And I'm excited about that. I mean, there are some aspects of the position I don't even know about yet. So I'm just going to step in and learn. And that was some great leadership advice that I heard lately. On a call I was on last night with the University of Virginia put on this great webinar with Geraldine McGinty. She's the first female president of ACR, the American College of Radiology. And she had some great leadership advice. And it was around that, like, just take more risks. And I know in my career, taking risks has always been, it's been pretty rewarding.
Yeah, I think all that you said, you know, be the best you can be. And take more risks is, you know, I think we see a lot as well, which is unfortunate that like women in some leadership positions just like, well, you know, it was the right place at the right time, or like there's nobody better to do the job. You're like, no, you were awesome. That's why you got the job, right?
I fall into that too. I mean, I described my ascension into leadership as like falling into it. But I mean, I'm only 6.5 years into my career. I mean, you don't have many department chairs who are that young or that inexperienced. So I'm a fan of both schools of thought. You know, you can fill a leadership void, and why not you? And, yeah. But I agree. I mean, owning your strengths, even when people are trying to tear you down at times. And this is not to say people are tearing at us all the time, because it can sound really dire. And a lot of people might say, well, why bother? So.
Yeah. I mean, that's very true. I think, yeah, you know, you're there because of your own merit. And then, you know, all external factors are really kind of irrelevant at this point. So and it, the other thing I wanted to touch on, before we run out of time is that, so what about the, you know, when it comes back to women early in their career or medical students or residents that are concerned about balancing family life with some of these, you know, there's call, there's weekend work, there's a, sure. You know, it's, but you know, what do you say to them that maybe are a little apprehensive because they are concerned about how they're going to balance it, not because they're, you know, their minds were poisoned that they need to think about that, but it's just a real concern. It's practical, right? So what's your advice to those people? And, you know, I have a little selfish knowledge because we're about to have a little one. So I'd like to know as well.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, men are concerned with balance now too. That's mm-hmm. okay. And that's becoming part of the cultural norm. And I think it started with Gen X. I mean, they were the lazy generation that came that actually wanted to leave work at some point and not live at work. And so, you know, people have definitely come before us who have started the trend. And that's why I write about work-life balance. I want to show just one model of how this can exist. You know, like I can be on call for a week around the clock. And when my husband is home, that's easy. And when my husband goes out of town, that's less easy. But I show the mechanics of how that works in my family. And for example, with people who want to have a family, I think it's important to have like a full battery of caregivers. So pre-COVID, we had this most amazing nanny, part-time nanny. And she would be with us usually 20 hours a week, but it could be 40 hours a week if my husband was away or if I was working really, really hard. And, you know, we haven't had her because of COVID, because of safety. And now, I mean, my child is three, so he goes to school, which is really daycare. And that's been a whole new issue to grapple with. You know, is it okay that we put him in school? But there's two of us and parenting is a lot of work. And so the bottom line is you have to decide what's right for your family. And so I talk about all these things on the blog. You know, how do you have a list of five different caregivers you can call when the first one falls through and the second one and the third one? Or who can I call at 2 a.m? Like I have a splenic embolization and I just need somebody to come over and sleep on the couch for a few hours. Like these are all the things that you can work through, but I swear it's worth it. It just is. And medicine is hard. No matter what field you choose, it's going to be demanding. And so you might as well do what you like. I felt called to medicine and called to my specific field where I could use the visuospatial reasoning and think in 3D and like use my hands to help people. And so I'm not going to not do that just because there are some extra hurdles or roadblocks or challenges. Yeah, and I would encourage other people, yeah, to think that way too. You know, you will figure it out. The other piece is that as physicians, we have so many resources. So, you know, we're not making $60,000 a year. We're making more than that. And you can, with those resources, you can easily figure this out. There are single parents who are figuring this out. So it's very, to use Marie Forleo, it's very figure outable.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's great. Those are great points. And, you know, we've talked about offloading some things. I've talked about it before, you know, time is the most valuable resource we have. Right. So, mm-hmm. If you're doing something you really don't enjoy, but you could maybe offload it for a fraction of what your hourly rate would be, it's probably a good idea, especially when there's children involved. So just a couple of questions to get to know you a little bit better before we sign off here. So like, if you have any time to do things for fun, what do you like to do?
Well, I've become a writer in my spare time. And yeah, this platform has absorbed a lot of my mental space. And, you know, pre-COVID, I used to like, you know, it's the winter. I used to like go snowboarding, being outside hiking. I live in Palm Springs, so we have these beautiful mountains here. Mm-hmm. And it's very seasonal. So just traveling was amazing when that used to be a thing.
Yeah. Remember that? That was fun.
We're dreaming of going to Norway next.
And cool.
So my family is actually from Europe. And so that's part of my backstory. And I just share some of that on the blog, you know, some of the pioneers in medicine we look up to, and like some of us are first generation American. And so I just want to break through some of those misconceptions that you have to be from like some elite physician family to do what I do, because you don't.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. My wife and I are both first generation physicians and we're doing okay. Yeah. Could you tell us the name of your book one more time so that people listening?
Yeah, absolutely. if you want to get a copy for your mentees, or if you're looking, staring down this career decision, which is a big one, it's called Save Lives, Enjoy Your Own. Yes, it's possible. And the subheading is Finding Your Place in Medicine. And you can find, of course, lots of free articles and stuff at my website, which is tiredsuperheroine.com. And I have a recording you can get if you sign up for my email list, which is a talk I recorded. I was meant to speak to the medical student scholars at the Society of Interventional Radiology meeting. And I put together this talk on a lot of different failures that I like stumbled over on my path to becoming a physician leader. And I just thought they nicely demonstrated how you don't have to be perfect to be a leader. You don't have to be chief resident to be like, you don't have to be on a certain trajectory. And despite how like cringeworthy some of these failures are, like it's just part of the process. And so I wanted to demonstrate that. And so people can get that at my website.
Awesome.
If you just scroll down, there's like some headphones and you can get it there.
Cool. Very, very cool. And then if you could just give one single piece of advice to women early in their career, what would that single piece of advice be?
Please don't settle for something because some burnt out physician or some physician who hasn't walked in your shoes says that you should do something easier. So pay attention to the work you'll be doing, the patients you'll be serving, and let that guide you. And if you have an inner voice, you know, you have one, even if it's stifled down under piles of textbooks, you know, find that inner voice. And you can, with the help of my book or with my, you know, my writing, let that help guide you to, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And on the other side, it really is a good life. And the people who say that it's not, they may not have that relevant experience. They may not be a mother in medicine, or they might not know what it's like to embolize a trauma pelvis.
Well, I certainly don't know what it's like, but I imagine it is.
It's the best.
Especially, you know, when I used to work at trauma centers and then IR would just whisk the people away to save their lives, right? You know, I think I could imagine that would be a pretty awesome feeling. So,
well, you get to save lives on a daily basis. How does it feel? It's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. It is. With medicine is a little different these days, but I think once we come out of this together, I think advice to people as well is just that medicine is different than it was 40 years ago. And yeah, the people that are, you know, late in their career, probably have no idea at this point when it comes to many different things. So that's great. So Barbara, thank you for joining me this morning and sharing coffee with me and talking about issues that I have no direct experience with. Cheers. Although I got this New York Giants mug, so they're out, not doing too well.
A giant homemade mug. It's huge.
Awesome. All right, Barbara. Well, thank you. Thank you for all the listeners live. We'll see you next time.
Great to talk to you.
Before we end, don't forget to reach out to MR Insurance Consultants, where their goal is to assist physicians in obtaining the most comprehensive coverage available to fit their unique situation. Reach out for both excellent and quality service at drpodcastnetwork.com/MR Insurance. What a great show with Dr. Hamilton. I really loved her insights into the male-dominated fields, and unfortunately, as it is, we still have to discuss these issues in 2021. I hope everyone enjoyed listening. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with your friends and colleagues. Every physician that can be helped by listening to some of the guests, the better. Additionally, the other thing I'd like you to do after listening is check out my website at andrewtisserdo.com. There, you'll find a free video series describing my transition from burnout as a new attending to professionally happy and some tips and tricks that I share along the way. And it's completely free. But otherwise, that's all we have for today. So remember, keep talking. All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest's statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.